This is Mae Brussel, and it is the second half of World Watchers, program number 809. If you watched Albert Hakim on television or in the news or heard him at all last week, he had a wonderful counterpart that preceded him, Elliot Abrams, an arrogant person, again illustrating that the decisions are made in the White House. Everybody's been on the stand. Makes it quite clear that Congress is just a big turd waiting to be thrown away, that they make their own decisions, that they're the best patriots. They have their reasons and motives. And Elliot Abrams, the deputy head of the State Department right under George Shultz for Central American Affairs, was seemed to be tapped right away for getting money from the Sultan of Brunei. So he was on the stand to testify. As it turns out, actually, George Shultz was the one who tapped the Sultan first. But the arrogance of these people is epitomized in the way they are asked to describe certain situations, like Robert McFarlane was asked about Mr. Garbanovar, and he said, well, the Iranians are nothing but rug merchants, just that sweeping kind of a sneer. So they asked Elliot Abrams, you happen to solicit money from the Sultan. How did you happen to go to the Sultan for this? The money was supposed to go, of course, to Lake Research, Lake Resources, which is the Willard Zucker account, of course. And this is what he said: from a list of potential donors, the officials struck out all pro-Soviets. They didn't want any leftists giving money for the Contras. And they ruled out right-wing dictatorships, which I don't know why he objects to, because then they went on with John Singlaub to get money from the Philippines when the Marcos were around in South Korea and Taiwan. The only one left out was Zia of Pakistan and Pinochet, and I mean, they might have done under the table, but they didn't want any right-wing dictatorships because they're putting in, you understand, this democracy down there. So he said they wanted nations that were dependent. They didn't want nations that were dependent on U.S. aid, which is another lie, because they went to Honduras and then threatened them they'd be cut off, and they went to Mexico and threatened them, and they went to Costa Rica and threatened them, and Guatemala threatened them. So there is evidence of extortion, of saying you won't get any aid unless you go along with what we're doing. So the dictators and the dependence is a lie. And he talked about you couldn't go to poverty-stricken. They wouldn't be interested in Nicaragua. So two countries remained. One was Venezuela, and I thought would not do this. So Abrams told the chuckling lawmakers, this is very funny, he said, then you're down to Brunei. Well, the result was that the Sultan, who gave the money and it was finally located, asked this week that he wants his money back. Right after that, there was an article in the newspaper following that June 3rd, Brunei Sultan wants his $10 million donation returned. And no wonder he wants it returned. He was the court of last resort, and here's a man testifying under oath that we only used him because he was the last one. Well, I think Mr. Abrams went to too much trouble to explain why he wanted the Sultan of Brunei, and he should have just shut his mouth and said, well, the Sultan's a friend of ours, and we're friendly, and so why not ask? So in the process of the money getting lost and then being found in identical account numbers in Switzerland at the Credit Suisse account, and the Sultan turning down the offer afterwards, I'd like to go to the question of Brunei and why Elliot Abrams and George Shultz went to them. Now, there is this Intelligence Review magazine, newspaper. It's a private subscription, and I've had it on the air, the address before, called ADI. And it comes out of Paris, and it's translated and sent to subscribers. And just recently, they had an article titled Brunei Shell, How Brunei Oil Ends Up in South Africa. And there is an embargo against South Africa. But this is the way that the national security and the president get around these embargoes. There was an embargo against sending arms to Iran. But that doesn't matter to them at all. And the article is titled Shell Sells to Marubeni, which is a Japanese firm. Marubeni resells to Mark Rich, and Mark Rich supplies South Africa. Now, many of you remember the broadcast. I hope you do, or you're new. I'll refresh you with some articles that I've done, some articles that I had on the air, and also new ones, and broadcasts I've done on Mark Rich. And this is what came out of France. since 1983, and of course this is when Reagan starts escalating with his hanky-pank. He's been in office since March 81. Since 1983, the Brunei Shell Petroleum Company has been selling crude oil to the Japanese trading firm Marubeni. Most of this oil was ostensibly desired for the United States. We were buying the Sultan's oil. However, Marubeni resold the oil to commodities trader Mark Rich, who eventually sold it to South Africa. Mark Rich, a resident of Zug, Switzerland, is well known as an oil supplier to South Africa. The total volume of crude oil sold by Mark Rich to South Africa since 1983 to 1987, or rather October 86, is about 2.5 million tons. And at the end of January in 1987, the Shipping Research Bureau published a survey on oil deliveries to South Africa, which sailed from Brunei. So this was put out in Europe about Brunei government using various ships from Japan, and the Shipping Research Bureau has identified no direct deliveries of Shell, which is from the Netherlands, the Queen Julianne and Prince Bernhard, but the continuous use of 23 tankers owned and managed by Shell that did deliver to South Africa. Now, Queen Julianne and Prince Bernhard are a couple. On in years, he was identified as part of the Lockheed spying scandal, got millions of dollars, and he was a member of Hitler's Waffen-SS, as was Mr. Richard von Weizsäcker's father, Ernest von Weizsäcker, as Otto von Bolschwing, all of them from the same organization. And then another article followed that in the United States from the People's Daily World, January 29th, mostly the same story. Brunei charged with covert sale of oil to South Africa. The Dutch anti-apartheid organization charged this week large amounts of oil from Brunei, the Southeast Asian Sultanate tied to Iran Gate. Surfaces through the Shipping Research Bureau is a Netherlands-based group that has exposed secret oil traffic, and the same gentleman who put up $10 million donation to the Nicaraguan Contras, described as the world's richest individual. I guess he replaced Daniel Ludwig in America, or Mr. Khashoggi, who's now $50 million in debt to the Sultan of Brunei, if you can believe that, in the last 1 month. This group went on and identified 56 deliveries of oil to South Africa. And it goes on to say this may be an even bigger scandal under investigation by the Brunei government, because large quantities of oil have disappeared, were unaccounted for. Although the official records show the oil was sold for delivery to the United States, in reality, a smaller group of tankers went here. The remainder went to South Africa by way of Japanese ships. Speaking of large stories, as well as the oil to South Africa against the embargo, that includes Mark Rich's involvement, and he's very closely associated to Henry Kissinger. I will get on next week, hopefully, to the connections of George Bush to the PTL, and the scandal, maybe many of you have seen it, and it goes directly to Lynn Nofziger, who was a White House aide at the time these transactions were taking place, who is under question with the WedTech Corporation. The WedTech is now wedded to the PTL, to George Bush, and a friend wanted to know if I was going to do parts of that this evening, but it's so large I probably have to take an hour, three quarters of an hour, to go into the links of Edwin Meese and Lynn Nofziger, who's now on the salary of Spitz Channel, who pleaded guilty, the first guilty plea to the Iran-Contra affair, residing under their cloak. And also Nofziger is linked to Fairchild in investigation. Now, Fairchild Schlumberger was the original corporation that formed TCI that Albert Hakim brought when he came over from Europe, from Iran. And I also want to do another half hour or three quarters of an hour on Albert Hakim, how he got his money from William Sullivan and the Olin Foundation, and went from Iran, putting his cash from Iran into the accounts of Willard Zucker in Switzerland, and came out to Los Gatos, California, to buy the Otto von Bolschwing Network that was formed, the TCI that became the Stanford Technology Trading Group. So those are two subjects that are big, and I bring those up now just to let you know that the WedTech, the wedding of the PTL to the White House, is very, very important to George Bush. But to just say that this article is saying that the linkage of Brunei oil to South Africa and the Royal Dutch family with the embargoes against the oil to South Africa may turn out to be a very big item. This article, last article on this exposure, South Africa says another Brunei imposed, although Brunei imposed an embargo on oil sales to South Africa as early as 1982, they circumvented the embargo by selling it to intermediaries, as I say, to the Marubeni, the Japanese firm, and Mark Rich, the U.S. dealer in Switzerland. So nothing is sacred. They also used, transported the oil, the Lorenzen's Rederi shipping from Norway and the Neptune Orient lines of Singapore. So Singapore and Norway take the oil of Brunei when they have an embargo against oil of South Africa to the Royal Dutch Shell, and Prince Bernhard is the chairman of the Bilderbergers that meets every year, the royal potentates who decide which countries will be overthrown within a one more year time. And so this is the way they circumvent situations, which I've had on the air for many, many years, but I think they become more meaningful as you see the operatives on the screen and read the articles, and I hope you're reading as much as you can about these characters. I'm taping their testimony. Maybe I'll be able to get these tape cassettes available to you. But just reading this in January isn't as meaningful as it is now to see how they use all these methods to circumvent any bill in Congress or any desire of the elected population, or how Brunei has an embargo and tells their people, although they don't have to count to their people, and the Netherlands has another embargo in the United States, but oil flows just the same, and they just tap whichever allies they want. So it's natural that Brunei would be tapped for this operation, because you could also smear them in some ways, and it did come out with the illegal oil going to South Africa, and when it comes out, it'll involve all of us. Now, the Sultan of Brunei said right away when the exposures began to come out, by January 16th, I didn't send any money to the Contras, and Jack Anderson sent his assistant to go see him, and he said emphatically that, of course, you don't know what their interpretation is. It was humanitarian. I didn't send it for weapons. And then a secret report came out that the $10 million was sent to a secret Swiss bank account, all by secret again. And the Sultan said he had no idea where the money went, but they won't give the name of the person who did get the money and drew the interest. And so the problem of dividing up hasn't been dealt with yet. It just came in the testimony, as I said before. If it was received in the right hands, Albert Hakim said, $3 million for the Contras. Now, the other $7 million goes into the enterprise. The $6 million profit from the Iranian arms goes into the enterprise, so that's $15 million. And you start adding up where their profits come from all over the world or how much they have, and you'd be busy for a lifetime. Now, Mark Rich was, he's a commodities trader, and he was a partner with Marvin Davis, who owns our Pebble Beach 100%. They both bought 20th Century Fox, and Mr. Rich had assets that had nothing to do with Fox Studio. They were kept over in Europe, and he was very, very wealthy, and owed the United States government many taxes, and he was introduced to Fox Studio by Denver oil man Marvin Davis, a very close friend of Henry Kissinger's, and they formed a private company, and then they bought 20th Century Fox, and one section of 20th Century Fox was one, it wasn't 50-50, there was like 50 for one person, Marvin Davis, and 30 for Mark Rich, and then 20% belonged to Chris Kraft, and the attorney for that was Arthur Lyman and Simon Rifkin, the attorneys for Chris Kraft. And so they were, and DeLorean was on the board of Chris Kraft, and I don't want to confuse you, and I've done broadcasts a long time ago. Many of you don't remember them, but I just bring these names out because what goes around comes around, and as these names of Brunei and Elliot Abrams and George Shultz come out, and their relationship to Mark Rich, you have to get back into who Mark Rich is. And of course, the Los Angeles Herald had an article in 1982, 5 years ago, that he's wealthy and secretive. You better believe that. He controls tens of thousands of gallons of crude oil and made a big killing during the crude oil crisis caused by the Iranian Revolution and the Iran-Iraq War, much of it from Nigeria. As a result, he made millions of dollars. And he was into the oil business with Iran and Iraq. And Henry Kissinger, who represented the financial interests of the Shah of Iran, as well as William Rogers, who was the attorney for the Shah, Kissinger and William Rogers were on the board of 20th Century Fox with Marvin Davis and Mark Rich, who bought it, and they were involved with millions that they didn't pay their taxes on, and Mark Rich has to stay out of the country. But the attorney for Mark Rich is Edward Bennett Williams on the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. The attorney for Robert Vesco, again, Vesco, the partner of Willard Zucker. And maybe I'm going too fast. I hope I'm not, but I know I am. But I think you get the overtones of these people involved with Iran, involved with oil. And Henry Kissinger was sending oil, both getting oil from the Shah and sending oil at the time of Khomeini with Mark Rich. And they were using their profits for their own personal use without paying any taxes in the United States and writing it off as if they were losing money where they actually weren't. They said they were making $12 a barrel. They were making $30, and, of course, were making a big profit. I have a friend in San Francisco who takes the financial papers and sends me marvelous articles on Mark Rich, which I've been waiting to use, and they didn't fit in the right time and place, but I might cite a few of them so you can look them up, because I can't put them all in the air, but I will share a lot of them with you. One is from Forbes magazine called Greed Incorporated. And the reason I bring it up now again, this is Fortune, December 29th, 1986. It's funny that this came out just at a time after Mr. Hassanfuss landed and just before the Iran-Iraq story broke. Because of the link of Brunet to Mark Rich, I'm wondering if the people who wrote this realized for Forbes that these connections would be coming out. The title above that is, while he whines to the media about being exiled from the United States, tax dodger Mark Rich and his family and pals build the control of the world aluminum market. And it says he gave an interview with Fortune magazine, the fugitive tax dodger, living in Zug, Switzerland, but he didn't tell his interviewers that he was buying up the total control of the world aluminum market, the chunk of it. They're trying to buy up independent smelter, independent suppliers of raw materials for aluminum. Big integrated companies like Alcan and Alcoa are outside their net, but what remains is several $1 billion, and they influence the price of the industry. And Rich and Green, both 52 years old, who live in Switzerland, were wanted on a 65-count criminal indictment of the U.S. Justice Department. Criminal evasion, it was $48 million, and then he paid millions of dollars of fine. He hasn't yet paid that those taxes for a huge illegal oil pricing system, and his thirst for profit is so great and insatiable that he's buying up all the aluminum in the world except for the two companies. Last month, and this is in November of 86, just when Hassanfuss was landing on the grass, the Malaysian government disclosed that in the early 1980s, it enlisted Rich to manipulate the world tin market. Tin prices surged in July 81 until February 82. And it says now the aluminum market is being bought up by Rich. He exerts a powerful influence on world production of bauxite and manipulates and moves into the world prices of aluminum and semi-refined ore. Cynical and greedy they may be, but Rich and Green, his partner, are brilliant traders in the commodities, and they deal, as I say, in bauxite, aluminum ingot in Brazil, Egypt, Jamaica, Venezuela, Australia, Japan, and so forth. And this is an article about their profits and where they move in which countries. And Forbes estimates that Rich's Mark Rich and Company, AG, and associates are earning about $150 million a year on aluminum-related transactions, and that's just a drop in the bucket to the other things that they do. That's buying up the aluminum. There is a new book that came out it was a year and a half ago, 1985, called Middle Men. I have it, Mark Rich and the $10 Billion Scam by A. Craig Kopitas. And you might get that book, The Middle Men, Mark Rich. The book review was titled Rich and Infamous, How Mark Made His Mint. And it tells of Mark Rich's holdings of more than $200 million, born in Antwerp, Belgium, and escaped from Europe and came to the United States in the early 40s, as did the Kissinger family and Peter Drucker and Fritz Kramer. And it tells about how he accumulated so many millions of dollars. He used bribery for payoffs, and Hakim, of course, used those. That was one of his private ways of accumulating money. He called them chocolates. One top trader, Robbie Lichtenstein, spent $25,000 a year on call girls for customers. He died at the age of 46. After making immense profits buying oil from the Shah of Iran, Mr. Rich turned around to buying from the Ayatollah Khomeini, defying the U.S. embargo against supporting Khomeini. Metal Men cites insider trading said he in turn sent weapons from Thailand and Spain to Mr. Khomeini in return for that oil. And it tells about his employees, 1,000 employees in dozens of countries, and a network that is vast. Well, this is the enterprise. These people all tap in with the same attorneys and bankers and associates into the enterprise. If you think the enterprise is big, these are just little tippy views of what Hakim calls the enterprise. And then it goes on to say that Mr. Green, his partner, pranced around New York and applauded himself, swapping 14 Boeing 747s to the Saudis in return for oil then that he would send to Israel. So nobody's really suffering except the people who fight these wars. And then it goes on to say Rich paid a fine of $50,000 a day until certain documents were produced from Switzerland, and that was quite a bit of money. It added up to a fine of $150 million that wasn't tax-deductible. And this book tells about his relationship in accumulating money and with people. And again, another person that he worked with in Bangkok set up these houses of prostitution. And Mr. Mantell, Mr. Rich's, the man, tells the story of Mr. Rich's man in Bangkok who was tortured and killed. And, of course, just in a small amount of time in this book, it goes into the way that he built his oil empire with Marvin Davis, a very, very wealthy man. As I say, he owns Pebble Beach and sold his 20th Century Fox to Mr. Murdoch from Australia and Great Britain. Interestingly enough, Mr. Vesco ties into Mark Rich and this whole syndicate. But in the book, Vesco, the Infernal Money-Making Machine by Michael Dorman, it tells on page 23 in 1961, Vesco began selling products manufactured by a small New Jersey firm called Bergen Captive Seal Corporation. It was involved with, again, aluminum. It was an aluminum company, and he sold aluminum products. And International Controls Corporation was another private company he worked with, and Captive Seal Corporation in New Jersey, a subsidiary of International Controls, headquartered in Fairfield, New Jersey. And his career began with a small company that involved aluminum. And so it's interesting that these people's lives merge and they don't get very far from these products that they started with and built these fortunes. And again, Vesco is described as a mystery person. Nobody knows how he got all his money, and the federal investigators have tried to go into his background, how he came into town with a little small house and a tacky old car, and he leaves a year later with a new Lincoln Continental, and these people just picked up millions and millions and top. You can get right into the commodity markets, into the stock exchange, into the large narcotics traffic and aluminum and grains and all the various industries that people depend upon. And a lot of them are run by these kind of persons like Hakim and Secord doing the legwork for the large corporate owners. In this book, it says the business Vesco originally established was an aluminum products distributor in New Jersey. Now, whether or not that connects the aluminum that this Mark Rich is doing now, I don't know. There's an article in Harper's Magazine, January 1984, How the Barbarians Do Business. And the reason I cite this is that Elliot Abrams is trying to show you that we are helping freedom fighters, that we are so caring about people and putting in democracies, and I wouldn't go to a dictatorship, and the Sultan of Brunei is nothing but a dictatorship, and South Africa is certainly a dictatorship, and they come out with the glory of we can't have those terrible Sandinistas. They don't have a newspaper to read. They closed the La Prensa. It turns out today there's an article that was run by the CIA. Of course, we knew that all along, but the people who run these investigations don't read the same things we read as they testified to. But How the Barbarians Do Business comes out of not a leftist people's world or anything, but Harper's, January 1984, and you can read that. There's another article I have from the Department of Agriculture in 1984. Well, this gentleman was shipping, of course, to South Africa. There was an embargo at that time, and he was wanted by the United States government for money that he owed, millions of dollars. The Department of Agriculture awarded Mark Rich a $33 million subsidy while he was a fugitive from American justice. The giant Swiss commodities firm Mark Rich & Company, they had pleaded guilty to 28 counts of false statements. They agreed to make restitution for back taxes of $200 million. But before they did it, or meanwhile, the Department of Agriculture arranged to help Mark Rich settle his account with the Treasury Department by awarding a CCC export credit guarantee contracts, GSM-102, worth $33 million to Richco, and it helped finance his grain sales to Ecuador, which is an interesting country, and I'll get to that in 1 second in terms of Elliot Abrams and the Sultan of Brunei. And I had that on the air just about 6 months ago, an article naming Elliot Abrams as working in South America in conjunction with the Sultan of Brunei, bringing the Sikhs to retrench and arm in Ecuador, eventually to overthrow India and have a revolution there and make India safe for the Sikhs and the Punjab, who are into narcotics. That's why Mrs. Gandhi went into the temple anyway, because it was a place of narcotics traffic, and narcotics were stored there, and they were buying the weapons for the violence in India, tearing that country apart. And this article goes into Rich had behind him a string of corrupt deals involving convicted swindler Robert Vesco, another fugitive of the courts. And of course, again, Vesco is part of the Willard Zucker operation and Edward Bennett Williams and the Arthur Lyman, Simon Rifkin offices and Carlos Letter Rivas, the Colombia cocaine cartel. He's just about everywhere. And of course, he was a partner of William Casey and Richard Allen in Florida and in the Azores before they went on to be promoted as chief of the CIA and national security advisor, Richard Allen was. But this Mark Rich was involved with Billy Carter, Armin Hammer, and a federal indictment was handed down in 1981 of tax evasion, fraud, racketeering, violations, and RICO established went to go after the organized crime arrest. The fact that he pleaded guilty doesn't matter. The point was that while he was being investigated, the USDA awarded him money for a contract for the Foreign Agriculture Service, and Undersecretary Daniel Amstutz, A-M-S-T-U-T-Z, a man in the international grain cartels, worked with the Cargill Corporation and Cargill Commodities from Switzerland that was formed in 1954. So he was awarded rewards from our agricultural department, and he was also wanted for his back taxes and couldn't come to this country. He still can't come to this country. And the article I referred to earlier was one that was printed March 1986, a year ago, about Jagin Singh Chauhan, C-H-A-U-H-A-N, again, I can't pronounce that very well, who was putting money into the newspapers in England, offering a big pot of green to kill Mrs. Gandhi. And this article I cited had to do with Ecuador being a place tied to the Israeli Mossad, to advisors in Ecuador government, to the Sultan of Brunei, that certain countries like Morocco and Brunei were dealing with the Islamic State in the northern section of the island of Borneo, and also were working as well as Southeast Asia with Malaysia and Singapore. And again, those are the two places where the oil was going to South Africa, and that they were setting up headquarters down in Ecuador where the Sikhs could cultivate a society not only to transfer drug traffic from Pakistan and process it, but this was a group of terrorists also financed a lot by Ayatollah Khomeini and deeply involved in drugs. And the location for Ecuador was set up partly by U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Inter-American Affairs Elliot Abrams. So you have Abrams and the violence in Ecuador and the Brunei linked to Mark Rich, who's closely associated with Vesco, and the drug traffic of Colombia that's tied into the Christic defendants and up to the Merrill Lynch, the offices where a lot of that money was deposited, a good hunk of it, in New York City. Donald Reagan was chairman of it at the time, just moving to the Treasury Department and the White House. So I went at length about this article, or these series of articles, rather, is to show you that when methinks thou protest too much, when Elliot Abrams gets up and tries to eliminate, 166 countries in the United Nations, he says, I won't take the right, I won't take the left, I need an oil company, and I didn't take Venezuela, so I took Brunei. Well, what he's right about, it is an oil company, And I hope a lot more comes out of it. It isn't the mandate of this investigation, but I hope a lot more comes out of it. Now, just quickly, I only have a few seconds to go. There was a lot of talk about death and suicide, that this $200,000 was set up for Ollie in case something happened to his family by Albert Hakim, and $2 million to go to him to keep the enterprise going in case Hakim died. And I don't have time now, but there was a lot of discussion about dying and death and how these people had death wishes. Robert McFarlane had a death wish. The San Francisco Examiner had an article May 27th. Heavy hitters told of suicide wishes. And I think of the book, The Control of Candy Jones, how people were told to commit suicide and go down to a place like Paradise Island and dive into the rocks and eliminate yourself, probably leave a note beside it, and keep the team together, the enterprise together, but go kill yourself. I'll do more on the death theme next week. I don't have time now, and that's enough for this week. My head is really blown by these hearings. I just think it's so fascinating, and I will pick up some of those other pieces I mentioned next week and go at length with those like I did these particular items this evening. In the meantime, hear as much of the hearings as you can. This is being recessed now, but get the back tapes or wait until the transcripts come out, and I hope you read them very carefully. This is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week.